Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
Hey, friendos, how you doing? Steve here.
And Larson.
Welcome back to Matt Chat, another exhilarating episode where we talk about pro wrestling right here at YouTube.
Your whole Dick Cavett show thing you want to do doesn't work unless the set's here. Without the set, it's pointless.
Son of a gun.
So don't even bother.
Son of a gun. Anyways, this is Matt Chat where we debate. We use the questions, video questions submitted by our $20 patrons. By our $20 patrons, and if you guys out there want to submit your own video questions, you can do so at patreon.com/Steven Larson. You can get on the show and then watch the YouTube comments explode with mean things they say about our wonderful patrons. I love our patrons.
Same
and
here.
The video questions that we get.
Same here.
So if you're a snob in the comments, you know what? You're just meanie. Yeah, anyways, we're also available at Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com/goingraw. I know I started looking at Mike. This is not a pro wrestling
tee. I was trying to see what it is. I haven't seen that one before.
You know what it is?
Is that the Museum of Death in
Vegas? Yeah, in Los Angeles.
Oh, Los Angeles, sorry.
Museum of Death.
I was in Vegas.
It is very grim. Very grim.
Well, with a name like Museum of Death, you would expect that.
Lots of super dark pictures on the walls. Not like, you know, luminescent dark. I mean, murder. Murder and death.
Okay.
Let's talk about wrestling now, Larson.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Let's debate wrestling.
All right. Let me bring up my notes.
First question from Zach Parks.
Where are the notes?
Let's see what Zach has to say.
G'day, friendos. It's a slightly tipsy Down Under Take Zach Parks here at about 2 a.m. in Australia. And it's been a few months since my video question, but I'm just going to say it anyway. Steven Larson, I want you to debate what would be the best way to go into WrestleMania next year for our dream match that we all want between Shinsuke and AJ, either with Shinsuke winning the Royal Rumble and AJ being the champion going into it, winning Survivor Series and stuff like that, or the other way around with AJ winning the Royal Rumble and Shinsuke being the champion, winning things going into WrestleMania. Cheers, friendos. Catch ya.
Thank you. You. Zach. Who is it? Zach?
Yes.
Thank you, Zach Parks.
Thank you, Zach Parks. So, as customary, Steve, first topic, you go first. Proceed.
All right. Very good. I actually think AJ should go in as champ, but I'm going to do my best to say why I think Shinsuke should go in as champ.
Before we start, you said, oh, just top of my head.
Yeah, no, top of my head. I'm getting there.
Do you want me to go first?
No. Yeah, you go first.
Okay, I'll go first. So AJ,
I'll just debunk your argument.
AJ should walk into WrestleMania as champion to face Shinsuke Nakamura.
Okay,
here's how it happens. So Jinder Mahal holds a belt to Clash of Champions.
Okay,
at which point AJ Styles wins it from him.
Okay.
See, I don't necessarily think Nakamura needs to win the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to start the story that way.
Yeah.
Though it would be a good accomplishment for Nakamura to do so. I don't think it's important. Well, it's important for him. I don't think it's necessary. I'll say that.
Okay.
Part of me really is hoping WWE has Reigns win the Rumble in Philadelphia, just kind of troll the audience still.
Yeah, it'd be funny.
Because
they seem
intent on doing that.
That's going to happen.
So they can set up the story, you know, Nakamura with a number one contender match, whatever it is. They need to bring up their history in Japan.
Oh, of course.
Not directly, because they probably can't do that. Well, they might be able to mention that they had matches in Japan, yada, yada. AJ can stay. We tore the house down at Wrestle Kingdom 9 or 10, whatever one it was. 10. Let's do the same at WrestleMania.
Okay.
They compete in the spirit of competition.
Yeah, sure.
You don't need a heel face thing here.
I agree.
Competition.
Yeah.
They've been laying the groundwork, or at least AJ has, ever since Money in the Bank, to get this match going.
Mm-hmm.
Just let them do it. So, and here's the huge upside of having Nakamura win at WrestleMania versus having him walk in Mania as champion. You get two coronations. Vince gets his upteenth coronation of Roman Reigns. Fans like us, who may not be into the Roman Reigns hype train, who enjoy Nakamura's work, we get that coronation.
Yeah.
We see him finally win this title that has eluded him all throughout the summer during his feud with Mahal. He gets the title. Huge moment in like the fourth match before the main event, before Roman Reigns wins Lesnar. You know, like all us hardcore wrestling fans pop, and all the casual fans get excited about Roman Reigns winning the main event without the Shield, because if rumors are true, he's not going to have the Shield by his side when he wins.
Yeah, okay, that's why. Because WrestleMania is going to be built around Roman versus Brock, and you don't want Shinsuke relegated to having his title win be at WrestleMania. That's going to be why. Thank you for proving out my point. You don't want that second coronation, because the only coronation that's going to matter at WrestleMania is going to be Roman going over Brock Lesnar. That's the only one that the WWE is going to focus on. That's going to be the center point of all their marketing, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, and it's the WWE title. It needs its own focal point. It needs its own grand stage.
Are you suggesting a two-day WrestleMania then?
No, that'd be rad, but no. I'm suggesting that Shinsuke walk into WrestleMania champion after winning it at the Royal Rumble. Because what are we going to get at the Royal Rumble in the Universal title scene? We're going to get Brock versus Finn Balor, where it's really obvious what's going to happen. Brock Lesnar is going to go over Finn Balor. So that can be in the main event of the Royal Rumble. That could be the big coronation, Shinsuke winning the WWE title. AJ doesn't either. There's no way Roman Reigns is not going to win the Rumble this year. That's a certainty, because that's Vince's A storyline. So it could be, like you said, from there on, it could just sort of go on the way, you know, it should. What they could do, the problem at this point is they've lost the opportunity, because they had Shinsuke. He didn't win the title against Jinder Mahal, and he really should have. And if it wasn't for this fascination they have with the Indian market, he totally would have. And Jinder totally wouldn't be champion, and I don't know if he ever would have been champion in the first place. So they've kind of lost their opportunity to do a kind of thing where Shinsuke wins the title and he clears out the division, all except for AJ. I think it could have been really fascinating for them to go into the Royal Rumble, or to go into WrestleMania, champion versus champion, perhaps. And I do, I actually much prefer for your way. But there, I think there is something to be said for Shinsuke having his coronation be at the Royal Rumble as opposed to Mania.
That's a valid point.
So,
but then again, WrestleMania is the grandest stage of them all. People want this match. They yearn for this match on that huge of a stage.
You and I both want this match.
Yes, very much so.
I know. It is a bummer that it is going to be overshadowed by
Brock
Lesnar.
I think it's going to be overshadowed in a corporate sense by WWE. But I think people who watch wrestling won't think of it that way.
Let me ask you something. Is there any chance that AJ and Shinsuke, should they get their match at Mania, are going to be told,
dial it back?
Don't take it to 100%.
I would hope not, but there's a chance.
I would hope not also. Yeesh. That'd be rough.
That'd be a bummer.
That great Wrestle Kingdom match, you know, that they could...
They could use that to build off of.
I know.
Use it. Granted, you mean, like, can't show footage from it, obviously. But
they could link to like the YouTube video of it, or the Daily Motion video of it.
It'd have to be Daily Motion.
They could like, they could like point the camera towards the screen,
or just send the link New Japan World.
There you go.
They
just buy New Japan World.
There you go.
Let's see here. Next up, we got our good friend Adam Mayhem. Chaos on Claud Avenue coming up.
It already happened.
Chaos on Claud Avenue 3 coming up. He has a question. Let's see what Adam has to say.
Buenas tardes, friendo universe. Bienvenidos to another edition of Chit Chat with the Champ. And right here at home, doing some laundry. You can hear in the background. Yeah, gotta do it. Anyway, Stephen Larson, here's my debate question for you. You know, me being in the wrestling industry and having to, you know, I grew up in a very old school environment, and now I have to learn how to be the way everything is right now. Now, my question for your debate is this. What do you think it's better? Going back into the old school way of doing things, not necessarily having kayfabe be, you know, above everything else, but a lot more, you know, serious? Or would you like to keep it the way it is right now, with all this crazy sequences in the ring and all the non-selling, not all the non-selling, but, you know, sometimes when that happens, and you know, and the dive type of thing. So yeah, so that's my question for you. Which one would you prefer? Each one of you pick one, and that's it. All right, guys, take it easy. Too sweet.
Thank you, Adam Mayhem.
Thank you, Adam Mayhem.
Now you go first.
All right. Before I'll preface it by saying this. I think we both agree that both is the correct answer.
Yeah.
It should be both. However, we are living in a new day and age. If you don't like Joey Ryan's penis flipping people to and fro, you shouldn't be watching pro wrestling. The old school Jim Cornette way of doing things isn't going to work anymore. You need the Young Bucks to be dazzling crowds. I took my wife, who had never been to a wrestling show in her life, to a PWG show specifically so she could see Kenny and the Young Bucks, the Elite, take on something like that. And a couple other awesome luchadors.
Flamita and Rey Fénix.
Those guys, too, all go at it. That's the new way. It's fascinating. It's amazing. It's so entertaining. And I love it all, and it's great. And that is the future. We don't need to be going in the past. You should know your history, Roman, but you need to be going forward. You don't need to be going backwards. That's why the Young Bucks are able to do the one sweet and not rely on hand gestures, because they're wrestling, they're storytelling. That is the way of the future. You don't need the old school way of doing things. Guess what? Kayfabe is dead. It doesn't need to come back. They're performers. Nobody thinks this is real. It's all a great form of athletic entertainment, and the way is the future, not the past.
Okay. I got to take the opposite side, I guess, kind of, for the sake of argument.
We both kind of agree, because I like a lot of old school stuff, too.
Yeah, same here. For the sake of argument, I'm going to say, let's go back to a certain degree to the old school. I'm not saying full-fledged kayfabe at all.
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm not, actually.
I think it'd be great.
I feel like one of the our backdrop pieces here is falling off the six. It sounds like something is falling. It distracted me.
Oh, you know what it is? It's my...
It's the tag on your shirt? That is loud.
Shirt, I know, right?
That is very loud.
It's weird.
So anyways, I'll preface by saying I'm not really of the Rip Rogers, Randy Orton school.
Yeah.
I'm not a headlock or ... headlock person.
Yeah.
I like the diving. I like the high flying. Yeah. I think wrestling now is probably more entertaining and exciting than it's ever been. That being said, if selling better and scaling back on the high spots enhances the story being told in the ring, then I'm for it. I'm all about what enhances the story being told in the ring. If that means 10 minutes of headlocks, fine.
Oh, God, that's a terrible suggestion.
If that means 100 dives in a row, fine. Give me whatever enhances the story. I'll use this as an example for a match recently this past year that didn't feature really any high spots and featured a lot of submission holds, but was captivating. And that was Minoru Suzuki versus Kazuchika Okada at, I think, New Beginning, mm-hmm. earlier this year. And the story is simple. Suzuki is working over Okada's legs.
Mm-hmm.
And he was putting him in all sorts of submission moves, simple ones, nothing Zack Sabre Jr.-like where he twists people in pretzels, nothing like that. But because the two competitors were focused on telling that story, telling it effectively, and getting an emotional response from the audience based on the story they are being told, it was effective. No high spots, simple wrestling. Some parts of the match were stiff, a lot of submission moves. But I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. Anything that, any move, any hold, any spot that could be used to enhance the story, that should be the focus, not necessarily how many dives in a row are being done. Unless 100 dives in a row detracts from the story being told in the ring.
Another great example of what you're talking about is Tyler Bate versus Pete Dunne at one of those NXT takeovers. Fantastic wrestling. Just felt very old school. Those guys, they just come off as very old school, and it's wonderful.
I mean, Zack Sabre Jr. is probably the best technical wrestler in the world, mm. but he's also an incredible storyteller
yeah.
because you can see the process he goes through beat by beat as he tries to put people in holds so they can't get to the ropes or get a limb free or something like that. You see the process as he does it.
Here's one aspect of the old school I think like we kind of have a joking affinity for, but it's the old school like lumbering hoss match.
Yeah.
Which I don't really think has a place in today's wrestling. Like you look at the hosses that are coming up, like future hosses, like Jeff Cobb, Keith Lee, guys like
they're
that.
They're far more athletic.
Who are doing very, very interesting
old,
thing
yeah.
with the idea of a hoss match.
Yeah.
But just a couple of tubby guys like lumbering about a ring, wearing
yeah.
jeans.
Yeah, and punching each other.
As cool as that sounds, we have enough of that we can watch on the WWE Network.
Let's push things forward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, guys like Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne, they can get in there with guys like the Young Bucks and have amazing matches. I'm really looking forward to seeing Leo Rush versus Tyler Bate. Both guys are in NXT.
Yeah.
I think that could be a fantastic match. And you can't think of two guys who have a more disparate style than these two guys.
Yeah. And, you know, we haven't seen a ton of Leo Rush's work, but the match we saw against him at PWG against Ricochet, that match was all about storytelling.
Exactly.
They were telling a story, and the moves they were doing was in service of the story being told. And I think more than anything, more than style, storytelling is the most important thing to focus on in any wrestling match.
I agree with you. Next up, we have Michael Berry. Let's see what Michael Berry has to say.
So, friendos, quick question while I just remembered that you guys wanted these by Monday. Should the New Day ever break up? Have a good one.
Thank you, Michael Berry.
Thank you, Michael Berry.
So, should the New Day break up? No!
Who takes this one first?
I'll go. No, they should never break up, ever.
Okay.
Ever.
Ever? Ever?
Ever.
Retire together, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's probably not going to happen. They probably will break up at some point.
True.
To pursue singles careers. But there's still so much for them to do. They've been around for more than 3 years as a team. They've already accomplished a lot. Longest reigning tag champions in WWE history.
Yeah.
If rumors are true, Vince wants to establish them as the greatest tag team in WWE history, which means they need six more title reigns.
Yeah.
So that's one thing they need to do. That's going to take a number of years to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what they need to do, they need to carry a singles belt as a team. Mm-hmm. Free Bird Rule, a singles title. It's unique. As far as I know, at least in WWE, no other team has done it. If you really want to separate the New Day from all the other tag teams in WWE history, let them do that. Something different, something new, wildly entertaining as well, because even now, 3 years after debuting, they are still entertaining, endlessly entertaining. And I don't see that changing. As long as they're out there entertaining us, putting on great matches, hell, I would love it if they feuded with the Usos in perpetuity. Let them wrestle the Usos for the next 30 years.
Forever.
And I would be entertained.
Yeah.
They're great. They still sell a ton of merch.
Yeah.
They're still entertaining. They still put on great matches. There's still a lot for them to do. Let them keep doing it. Don't break them up.
Ever is a long time. Ever is a very long time. It's not just now. It's not just 2 weeks from now. It's not 2 years from now. It's ever. Yes, they absolutely should break up at a certain point, and that point is when they don't have anything left to do. I absolutely agree. They should free bird rule a singles title. I absolutely agree. I agree they should have another six title runs to make them the best ever. I agree they should do everything they should be able to do, but these guys are still, I mean, even Kofi, he's been around for a very long time. Xavier Woods and Big E, they've been around for a little while, but I think that eventually you need to see a New Day breakup. And here's the thing about these guys is that this act is so effective, is so great, is so entertaining that they could pull off, and it would be tricky, they could pull off three successful solo acts with some sort of storyline where they break up, and you don't even need like a heel or a face type thing. You can pull off a breakup of the New Day where all three men retain the audience support that they currently enjoy. And yeah, I absolutely do. I think Big E proved in NXT that he can be a legit top title candidate. He can be a champion. And I'd love to see that for him one day. I think Xavier Woods, same can be said for him. Kofi Kingston, before the New Day, kind of already had his run with some single titles. But I definitely think Big E, I think that they could totally pull off a solo run for him as one of the top champions.
Well, I agree with that. But they can do all that still while...
It would water it. But if they do that as a Freebird rule...
No, I'm not even saying... I'm saying have them defend the U.S. title.
Oh, yeah.
Under Freebird rules. But then they could still pursue individual success while still being a unified team.
Yeah, but eventually they're going to run out of stuff to do. Eventually they're going to run out of stuff to do.
They've managed to stay really relevant, really fresh, really entertaining after 3+ years.
Yeah. Yeah, but it wasn't the entirety of those 3 years. I'd say like 2 out of those 3 years.
I don't know. Maybe it's probably like 2 3/4 of those 3 years. They were really good.
No.
Yeah. It's not like the
maybe first. Maybe 2 1/4.
No, not like, it was not like the first year they were kind of finding their way. They found their way. Once they kind of hit upon what they eventually became, it was off to the races.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, eventually they're going to break up.
Yeah, I know, probably.
Yeah.
But this is a debate show.
No,
I don't want them to break up.
I'm actually kind of with you on this one.
I love the New Day.
I don't really want them to break up either.
No, they're too good together.
AO Worm has a question. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, what's going on, friendos? AO Worm here, back with another video question. It's about Enzo Amore. So, for this debate, I want you guys to debate who would be the best trainer for Enzo Amore to get him on par with all the other cruiserweights. Thanks, friendos.
Thank you, AO Worm.
What a great question. Who should be the one? Who should be the one to help Enzo become master cruiserweight?
Tell me.
Two words. Mustafa Ali.
Good choice.
On the Twitter. We've mentioned this before. If you follow him on Twitter, he'll post training videos of himself doing wrestling moves, learning his craft. He's a guy who obviously takes learning the craft very, very seriously. And I think there's nobody better but Mustafa Ali, who Enzo is now kind of getting into a program with a little bit, or it looks more like they're going towards Survivor Series with this whole thing, like heels versus faces, cruiserweights. But I'd love to see Enzo and Mustafa Ali. I think Mustafa Ali has proven to be one of the standouts of the cruiserweight division. I think that he could do a lot with Enzo Amore. He doesn't have to be like the high-flying guy doing crazy stuff, flying off ceilings and stuff, but he can teach him about a lot of the fundamentals of what I like to call small ball wrestling, cruiserweight wrestling. You know, Enzo is used to being in there being tossed around by bigger guys, but he needs to adapt his wrestling and he needs to step up his game to hang with these cruiserweights. Mustafa Ali, one of my personal favorite wrestlers in the cruiserweight division. Can't think of a better guy to do it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like Mustafa Ali a lot. I like him a lot. But the correct answer is the Brian Kendrick, and I'll tell you why. He has a wealth of training experience. He's a trainer at Santino Brothers Wrestling Academy in Los Angeles. When Ronda Rousey was to start her wrestling training, they sent her to Brian Kendrick. Again, a wealth of training experience. Based on his social media, Enzo seems to like Los Angeles.
That's true.
Seems to frequent the city often.
Yeah.
That's where Santino Brothers is based. Mm-hmm. So we can go and hobnob with stars, mm-hmm. Try to get movie roles, and at the same time, train to become a better wrestler.
Ooh.
Enzo is not the most athletically gifted. Kendrick doesn't rely on high-flying moves.
True.
He relies on smarts,
yeah.
Strong striking skills, and a decent submission game. Mm-hmm. And that's all things that Enzo can learn. Mm-hmm. Enzo could be the brawler of the 205 Live television program. And Kendrick can help him with that. More importantly, help him with the storytelling abilities. So while he might not be putting on five-star classics, he can at least competently tell a story and put on entertaining matches, which I think is probably the most we can hope for.
Yeah.
So it's got to be Brian Kendrick.
Yeah. I kind of agree with you on this one, actually, because you chose first. I opened up the notes. You already had it written down. Because Brian Kendrick's old, too. He's like super yeah. old. So, and you're right. He's not the most athletic guy. It's kind of a no-brainer, to be honest with you. I just love Mustafa Ali. He posts videos of him doing stuff.
Oh, no, Mustafa Ali's okay. great.
He seems like he has some sort of designs on being a champ or a trainer at some point. Yeah, so, you know, send him to him. I mean, if you're going to be working a program with this guy, you know, at least even in the short term, hey, go talk to him about how to wrestle. Next up from X-Ray Guy. He's got a very interesting question. Let's see what he has.
Hey there, friendos. X-Ray Guy here with my first ever video question. I have a bit of a hypothetical question for you two. Let's say in some weird alternate universe, WWE, instead of trying to scoop up all hot indie talent, decides to become a modern-day equivalent of the NWA. All the indie promotions can sign under their banner, pay their dues, they keep control of their territories, and they keep all their superstars. All the WWE titles become the equivalent of NWA titles as they used to be. They can be won by anybody in any territory and are defended throughout all the territories. The WWE network is still around as well. It instead now functions as a repository for any kind of recorded specials from any of the territories, any kind of long house shows that they want to tape, etc., etc. Raw is around still too. It is now a weekly roundup of everything happening within the WWE banner and all of the promotions. I wonder how this would actually work out. Larson, I want you to debate how this could start a new golden age of wrestling. Steve, you're the opposite. Argue why this is booty and it'd be lucky to last a year. Thanks for everything you do, friendos. Take care easy.
Thank you, X-Ray Guy.
I like to think that X-Ray Guy has like a PowerPoint presentation all ready to go.
I feel like we're going to need that. Ones of our own to get through this because there's a lot to wade through here.
Okay, so essentially he's saying, Could this work? WWE, you lose your central programming.
Well, I'm not sure he's. Well, I'm not sure that
because he said Raw would become
was like an anthology. I know, but does that necessarily mean that there's no centralized WWE programming? Period.
I would think so.
Okay.
Because look, Raw is their flagship show. Yeah. So I'm thinking everybody gets split off into territories. Could that work?
And he gave us positions, so we have to debate these positions.
I have to say no, it's not going to work.
And I have to say yes.
Which is probably the easier position to go with. It is the easier position. They have something that works very, very well right now, and I feel like doing that would simply dilute the talent. So, like, I don't know, you split Brock Lesnar off into one thing, you split Braun Strowman off into another thing, you split Roman Reigns off into another thing.
But at the same time, if one of those is champion, they will eventually all meet.
They will eventually all meet, but I just don't know, like, you know, you can't, and then you can't really, like, protect your champion like they used to back in the day because, like, social media now is, like, too much of a thing. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't see that.
It would take a different kind of wrestler, too. Like, you know, like Ric Flair back in the day.
This is a fascinating alternate universe.
When Ric Flair was champ back in the day, he used to do hour-long time limit draws,
yeah,
and he'd make whoever was the top guy in the territory look like $1 million,
yeah,
but he either, you know, win, draw, time limit draw, or get counted out or DQ'd or something, mm-hmm, so everybody's covered.
Yeah.
But, you know, their top guy would look great, so that territory would be able to draw going forward.
Yeah.
It would just take a totally different approach to things.
Because part of the joy of, I mean, with so much programming that they have, you need more interaction between, like, all your entire roster, you know? And so, like, you go from one program to another program. And with territories, it'd be much difficult to, like, hop over another. You know, it's like, yeah, your top champion is going to be going from place to place. But it's like, you know, I just don't see how that can work in today's, in this day and age.
It would be difficult.
It would be, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But you can go ahead and try to say yes. I'll see if
I
can try to
put them together. Here's a couple of things that I kind of thought might be at least potential perks. Let's say, for example, you have Evolve, you have PWG,
mm-hmm,
just throwing some well-known,
yeah,
indie.
Progress.
Progress. I'm thinking just in terms of the states.
In the states.
Keep the map small. Wrestle Circus in Texas.
Yeah, sure.
Just use those as examples. Say they're all.
Up.
They all. What's that?
You're about to throw up.
No, I just belched. I had Taco Bell for lunch again. They all exist under this WWE banner.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're autonomous organizations who control their own booking, apart from when the WWE champ comes into town. So this could potentially allow some of these indie wrestlers the perks of working for WWE in terms of exposure, increased pay, without the rigorous travel schedule WWE wrestlers now have to deal with, being on the road 250, 300 days a year, all the promotional appearances, being home one day a week maybe, working 14 days straight if you're going on an overseas tour. This might help in that regard, help keep the talent healthier because they're not dealing with all of that. And that they themselves could retain a sense of independence,
mm,
while still, again, being under the WWE umbrella. Also, WWE can use these territories as multiple developmental territories, so you wouldn't have the long jam like you have in NXT right now, where you have all these indie guys being signed, they're getting pushed, while these developmental talents kind of have to wait for their spot to open up. Just recently, we had Lars Sullivan make a huge splash, but he's been signed, I think, for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been sitting around developing, which is great because he's awesome. But he just, it seems like maybe when it might have been his turn, they brought in someone else. If you got the territories, you can have each territory can have a developmental aspect to it, and you wouldn't have that logjam anymore. And I don't know if this is necessarily the case, but kind of feel like it'd be far less overhead for WWE. Each promotion was in charge of handling, paying the wrestlers. And then WWE, all really have to deal with is coordinating shows, television tapings, pay-per-views.
Yeah, but they're probably not making nearly as much profit either.
Oh, probably not. which is probably the number one reason they'll never do it.
Well,
they'll
no, I mean, that's
There's a very good reason why the territory system fell in the first place.
Yeah.
It's because someone, Vince McMahon, saw the ability to conglomerate everything and create a national force in the WWF.
Right, and what was the driving force behind that? It was cable. You know, it was cable, yep, TV.
Now, so, with internet changing things.
Well, that's the main thing is that, so back in the territory days, like some guys in let's say, the South didn't even know who, like, Bruno was. You know, it's like it's because there was no Twitter, there was no social media, there was no, like, you know, internet. Back then, they didn't
wasn't
like
even cable TV. In
there
the,
wasn't
the early 70s in a lot of parts of the country.
Wasn't
yeah,
even cable TV. So it's like people don't even know who, like, you know, who was it was saying? I forget who it was that was relating a story about when Ric Flair showed up in WWF in '91. Whoever was telling the story, I forget who it was saying, yeah, I didn't think it was that cool because I didn't even know who he was.
Yeah. I mean, shoot.
Oh, it was Sam Roberts. It was Sam Roberts on his podcast.
I didn't know who Ric Flair was in '91. I had no idea. I only watched WWE.
And so these days, everybody would know, like, because of social media, everybody would know who is who. And it'd be like, well, why is this guy in my town? You know, it's like, yeah, I got his main champion through here once, but he's in like these other guys over here, like the New Day, they're over there in New York, and I'm out here in San Francisco or whatever, or Sacramento.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't they coming over here? I want to see them.
Yeah, and that's the nature of the independent scene now is you have promotions, but wrestlers just go in between.
But wrestlers aren't beholden to those territories. They're not signing contracts with those territories. Yeah. They're going wherever they want to go, and, you know, so they're able to accomplish that. So I love that it's such a well-thought-out question.
It is.
And it's a fascinating alternate universe question, but I just don't see how
it would probably take an entire episode of this show to kind of wade our way through every aspect.
It would take like a week of research to do, too.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Vincent Palmieri. Let's see Vincent, see what he has to say.
Oh, hi, Stephen Larson. I'm just looking at my Battle of Los Angeles 2017 DVDs, and it got me thinking about a video question. This time around, we're going to do tournaments. So at this point, every year, WWE does the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. New Japan does the G1. But I'm going to talk about two tournaments that they've only done once in their history. The Mae Young Classic and the Cruiserweight Classic. In your guys' opinions, each pick a side, which was a better tournament all around?
Thank you, Vincent.
Thank you, Vincent. I'll go with the Cruiserweight Classic on this one. I think there's a couple reasons. Number one, granted, it's not everybody's cup of tea, but we got a show out of it, which is more than I can say for the UK tournament or the Mae Young Classic. You know, they had sort of suggested, yeah, there's going to be a UK show, and we keep on hearing stuff about that, but I don't know if it's ever going to happen. They mentioned that, you know, with everybody they signed for the Mae Young Classic, they mentioned that there was rumors that they might be doing an all-women show, and that definitely seems off the table at this point. And so, you know, the Cruiserweight Classic was such a success that it generated its own division. It generated its own show. Granted, it's not in the top 10 every week, but, you know, they're trying. The wrestling, by far, was better in the Cruiserweight Classic than in the Mae Young Classic. It introduced us to a whole wealth of great independent talents. What am I missing out? We got to see Kota Ibushi in the WWE. Got to see Zack Sabre Jr. in the WWE. Those are very cool things. Let's see here. What else? It gave Neville, like, eventually, it gave Neville a new lease on life, and then he took it away from us and left. So that sucked. It attracted people like Austin Aries, who eventually, of course, left as well. and, you know, it attracted guys like Leo Rush, who we get in NXT right now, and I think he'd be a fantastic shot in the arm to 205 Live. If it wasn't for the Cruiserweight Classic, I would have never known about Akira Tozawa. I never would have known about Noam Dar. I never would have known about, we got to see Brian Kendrick come back, which is a great second act for him in the WWE. So I think all in all, not taking away anything the Mae Young Classic has had to offer, and I think that we're still going to see how that's going to pay off over the next 12 months. So, you know, the jury's still out. I think the Cruiserweight Classic, on the whole, was a more successful event, but that's not taking anything away from the Mae Young Classic.
All right. First, you have the historical aspect of the Mae Young Classic.
Sure.
For WWE, their first women's tournament they've ever produced, and by any measure, I think it was a rousing success.
Mm-hmm.
It gave performers, by and large, I think, maybe with the exception of I don't know what kind of audiences Kairi Sane performed in front of in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, the largest platform for a lot of these competitors.
Absolutely.
Many of them were far from household names. And this gave a huge platform. And there was a number of star-making performances. We did a whole countdown on it of standout performances from the Mae Young Classic. Yeah, the Cruiserweight Classic brought a lot of names into our mind that we might not have been aware of, but I think by and large the field was populated by wrestlers who are relatively well known in the independent scene. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case for the Mae Young Classic, because I don't think there's as many avenues for women's wrestlers in terms of various promotions around the country that there is for the men. And so just in terms of giving these women a huge platform in which to perform, in that sense alone, it blew away the Cruiserweight Classic. Because Kota Ibushi wrestled at Wrestle Kingdom in front of 50,000 people. I'm sure Zack Sabre Jr. wrestled in front of huge crowds. Mm-hmm. Maybe Kairi Sane has. I'm not sure. Mm. But, you know, they showed the video packages of some matches from a lot of these women. And, you know, they're wrestling in front of a couple hundred people, 400 or 500 people here in the States. And now, you know, some of them are household names.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Mae Young Classic was a massive, massive, massive success for the WWE Network. It dominated the ratings for the 3 weeks it was on. It knocked 205 Live completely out of the water. Destroyed it in the ratings.
It's not a fair comparison, but go ahead.
I'm just saying, it did. I don't know how well, in comparison, how well the Cruiserweight Classic did in terms of ratings. I'll have to do some research into it. But
did very good.
But, you know, there was 2 weeks after they aired, there were still episodes of the Mae Young Classic. At the first round, still in the top 10 of the network ratings. Huge success from that standpoint alone. Not to mention giving all these incredibly talented women a huge opportunity to showcase their skills. And hopefully now in either an NXT or in the main roster, these women that have signed on with the WWE will get continued opportunities to show what they can do. And hopefully what Lita was talking about, doing a women's tag division, whether it be an NXT or on the main roster, will come to fruition. Assuming they add an extra hour to NXT, because it's just even more television time.
It'd be good.
It'd be great.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Next up, Daryl Takahashi. Let's see what he has to say.
What's good, Stephen Larson and many friendos out there? Another question for Matchett from the cat, Daryl Takahashi. And my question is, let's say somehow, some way, WCW won the Monday Night Wars. In the modern day, would they still be the top promotion, or do you think TNA could have jumped them as top promotion? Thanks.
Thank you, Daryl.
Thank you. More alternate universe.
Yeah, that's a lot of
let's
what
up,
if.
Hey, okay, let's set up a plausible scenario.
All right.
For Dick, because
I think we need to set up some ground rules here, because otherwise we could just follow various tangents in terms of how we plot things
what
out.
What universe would the WWF...
Worse than the WWF, not only by losing the Monday Night Wars, they folded. They went out of business. WCW bought
Which
them.
Was a possibility.
Yes.
I mean, it could have been as simple as Vince McMahon went to prison for the steroid scandal.
Yeah.
Left Jerry Jarrett in charge. He put Jeff Jarrett in as champion, and then immediately they folded. I mean, it could have been as simple as that. If he went to prison, we never would have gotten the Attitude Era. What if Vince McMahon... never got the inspiration, I guess partially from the Click, maybe some of it from the NWO, to sort of launch into the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
What if he doubled down on the cheesy, kiddie type freaking, you know, everybody's a job gimmick type thing? The
literal gimmicks.
And the NWO, what if Eric Bischoff knew what he was doing?
This is a lot of what ifs. I think we need to simplify
things. Well, okay. Vince McMahon goes to jail. Jerry Jarrett takes over and puts Jeff Jarrett as champion. Attitude Era never happens. You're telling me they'd stay in business?
No. That's the same. That's fine. That's simplified.
There's a good one.
But okay. If you're doing 10 what ifs.
Okay. Well, no. That's the only one we need.
Okay.
WWF's out of business. WCW continues on. The question is, would WCW be still to this day the top promotion, or would TNA have taken over?
Can I say no to both?
okay.
Because here's the thing. Here, I'll start.
Yeah, go ahead.
If WCW, well, I guess in your scenario, that's not necessarily the case. If let's
just, no, you're right. Say what you're about to say.
Well, no, because I'll go back. If your scenario happened, if Jerry Jarrett was placed in charge of WWE because Vince McMahon went in jail, Jeff Jarrett was WWE champion for a spell, Attitude Era never happened, WWE goes out of business. There is still a chance that because initially when we watched this, I was like, if WCW doesn't fold, TNA doesn't exist. But if your scenario happens, then there's a possibility that it does exist.
Right.
Here's the thing, though. WCW was run horribly.
Mm-hmm.
In many aspects, they succeeded despite themselves. So even if they won the Monday Night Wars, there's no guarantee they would still be around because they were hemorrhaging money. Creatively was a mess. There was no vision. No one had kind of like overall authority over decision making process.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Hold on 1 second.
What?
For this right here, isn't this part of your answer? So you I'm supposed to argue for TNA and you're saying no WCW. If no WCW went out of business, wouldn't that mean TNA would have?
Not necessarily. There's an alternative.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to erase this, but you continue on, please. Okay. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Sorry. That's okay. I just like you defending TNA across the board. That's yeah. why I put that there.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I really think would happen. Go ahead.
I still would say there's a decent shot that WCW goes out of business between 2001 or let's say, early 2000s, late 90s, and today. Even by, was it 96? Was that when AOL bought Time Warner?
Yeah.
AOL was already souring on the idea of broadcasting wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And if WCW lost their television deal, they would probably be dead in the water.
Well, that was exactly what was happening.
Yeah.
You know, that's why Bischoff and his investment group didn't end up buying
it. So let's say WCW is a train wreck in terms of their operations. And that continues even after the Monday Night Wars. So let's say Time Warner, AOL Time Warner, is tired of hemorrhaging money, tired of Vince Russo running this product into the ground. They say, we're done with this. We're dropping it from TNT. Good luck finding stuff, a television deal elsewhere. WCW probably goes out of business. So you have WWF and WCW out of business. You have all these wrestlers unemployed. So let's say Jeff Jarrett, following his unsuccessful run as WWE champion, goes ahead and starts some company. Maybe he calls it TNA again. You still have everybody who was employed by WWE plus everybody who was employed by WCW looking for work. And now the American independent scene wasn't quite in the same shape as it was as it is now. But, you know, in the early aughts, you still had ECW. Mm-hmm. You still had Ring of Honor was starting up. But even then, I don't think either of those. I don't know. I just feel like the landscape would be completely different.
It'd be like too different for us.
I kind of feel like it'd almost be more like it was in the territory days, mm-hmm. where there would be regional promotions like ECW's, by and large, regional promotion in the mm-hmm. Northeast. Same with Ring of Honor was more or less in the Northeast. You'd have a lot more of these regional promotions, and some of the talent from WCW and WWF would go to those places, sign on there, get work, and you kind of see, I would imagine, a rebirth of the territory days and just them all competing to try to get the national TV deal, and whoever manages to get that first would have the advantage.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say WCW would have survived, and I think WCW would still be going today, and I think WCW would still be the top promotion, and I'll tell you why. Because if WWF folds, like you said, all that talent would be available, okay? Then WCW, who if TNT didn't want them, and it seemed like TNT did not want them, USA Network would see this big ratings void in their schedule, and they would say, whoa, you don't want WCW? Okay, let's cut a deal. Let's bring them over here. Or they would have cut a deal with Eric Bischoff. Eric Bischoff would have owned and his investment group would have owned WCW. He would have brought them over. And so you still would have had WCW. Then you would have had access to all these other characters. And it's not like they wouldn't have treated the invasion angle. They still would have had an invasion angle with WWF guys. They would have come over this time. It has just been the inverse. And yeah, they probably all would have joined the NWO or something stupid would have happened. But I think the ratings, because of all that talent then coming into WCW, would have kept the ratings such that USA would have been happy and the product would have continued. Eventually, you might have seen something like Shane McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, Triple H coming in, ascending the ranks into a top spot on WCW. That's what we can hope. And you would have seen a product maybe a lot like what we're hoping to see.
That's really hopeful.
Coming up in a couple of years or, you know, whenever Vince McMahon decides to step down and actually retire, you might have actually seen that aspect of things hastened. TNA would have...
You mean WCW?
No, TNA would have started up and ended up dying or be doing whatever. You know, I'd still be doing my Impact reviews right now. We just, instead of going in Raw, I'd be going in Nitro. Or Dan would have come up with a different lewd name for, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know any double entendres that we can use Nitro with. Yeah, I'm trying to think about it. But, I do think that'd be the case. I think that there would have been enough talent in, that had been gone in WWF. Although, I guess,
well, here's the thing.
If they had never been the Attitude Era, they never would have been that talent that could have transcended, and WCW might not have been able to use them. Maybe that's the case. I don't know.
And also, if WCW were, if they were hemorrhaging money, Time Warner, AOL Time Warner, let them go sign a deal with USA, you would assume they would have to pare back expenses, which would mean dropping talent, not adding new talent in, potentially.
Well, yeah, but,
without competition, their ratings would probably go down,
That's
too.
A possibility, but I think the idea of, okay, so who was hot right before the Attitude Era? You're talking about Bret Hart, you're talking about The Undertaker, you're Shawn talking Michaels. About Shawn Michaels. You're talking about, those are enough names, I think, to keep people, oh, wow, WWF just lost. Let's tune into WCW and see what's gone over there. And on top of that, WCW, they wouldn't have been... Here's the thing. The WWF survived because of the competition. WCW kind of died because of the competition, because they were trying to keep up with what WWF was trying to do as opposed to just do their own thing. And so you had ridiculous stuff and you had Vince Russo run amok. And without that check in place, the Vince McMahon checking him, it was just pure crap. And sensationalist or shocking to be shocking as opposed to shocking to advanced stories.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Like you said, the landscape would have been so different. It's hard to tell what would have happened. I do believe that there would have been the distinct possibility that WCW would have somehow survived, because they're the only game in town. They're the biggest game in town, and they would have had all that talent. I think for a while, they'd be using that talent to the degree that people would be kind of interested in. Okay, well, this is kind of interesting. It's like Marvel and DC getting together. We have one last question.
One last question from
the
JT.
Professor.
JT Hosack. Let's see
JT Hosack.
Good afternoon, friendos. This is JT the Professor Hosack here with another Matt Chat submission. So WWE 2K18 just came out. I've been enjoying it so far. But there have been a lot of lists, they make lists out of everything these days, of the wrestlers with the best, the worst, and the most outrageous rankings in the game. So, Steve Larson, debate who has the best ranking in the game, who has the worst ranking in the game, and who has, by far, the most outrageous ranking in the WWE 2K18 game. I hope you guys have a great day. I'm headed back to class to teach because I gave them a little bit of break to be able to submit this. Y'all have a good one. Bye.
Thank you, JT.
Thank you, Professor. All right, so I had to go through the rankings and ratings. The ratings. I compiled some of my best, worst, most outrageously rated wrestlers in 2K18. Surprisingly, I'll go first.
Yeah.
The most outrageous goes to the individual who is the biggest heel in the history of pro wrestling.
Yeah, but he was never a good wrestler.
Mr. McMahon came through with only a 74.
Yeah, because he was never
That's
a good wrestler.
That's terrible.
He's never a good wrestler.
Best heel.
Yeah.
Sold that stunner like nobody but The Rock.
Oh, no. Usually he would just fall.
DDP from 1998 had an 89 rating.
Okay.
Which is one notch lower than Finn Balor. That's stupid beyond belief.
No, he was huge in
98. He was like 37 years old.
Doesn't matter. He was massive in 98.
No way.
Yeah, he was when he won the title. Not,
I know. I understand that within the universe of the WCW, he was huge.
Yeah.
And I understand he won the title. But, dude, come on. An 89? Give me a break. Occam and Razier only got 82 and 83. You think Occam in his prime couldn't take on? It still has yet to reach his prime. Wouldn't be able to destroy DDP in his prime. Occam now, rather.
No, DDP has at an a diamond 82. Cutter, man.
Why are Occam and Razier a point apart? What does Razier have that Occam doesn't?
Yeah, that's confusing me to me, too.
They should be the exact same.
See, I have a problem with McMahon being rated that low because he's not a wrestler.
Mr. Perfect at 86? How is Mr. Perfect not as good as DDP? DDP's 3 whole points Mr. above
Perfect
Mr. Perfect.
Never won a world title.
If your name is Mr. Perfect,
well, then you should
DDP
be 100.
DDP didn't really either.
Yeah, he did.
It was a WCW world title. It's
still a world title.
It didn't really matter. Oh, my last point about DDP 98, getting that 89 rating, well above all of the Chris Jerichos.
Yeah, that's weird.
There you go. I win. Go ahead.
As far as the best, Seth Rollins is on the cover. He deserves for that reason. a quality rating, he gets it 92. And given his success in WWE, his skill set, I think that rating is appropriate. Mm-hmm. Just a step below Brock Lesnar, but above, actually, AJ should be on that level too.
What was AJ's rating?
He's 90.
So you're saying AJ Styles should be one mere point above DDP 1990?
No, I'm saying I think AJ
should be much higher.
Yeah, okay, AJ should be higher. AJ should be 92.
What's Shinsuke? 90.
He's 89.
Okay, that makes sense.
As far as the worst, Roman Reigns shouldn't be 95. He should be tied with Brock at 93.
Absolutely ridiculous. Roman Reigns should definitely be the top dog. You know why? Because this isn't WWE 2K17. What's going to happen in the year 2018?
Well, then in the year 2018, when the 2K19 is released, then he can be 95.
This
but right now,
projecting to the
until
future,
he beats Brock, well, then they're telegraphing to finish WrestleMania.
Yeah, well, it's already been telegraphed by everybody.
Reigns should be a 93 along with Brock Lesnar. As far as most outrageous, both Randy.
Who should be a 95 then?
Nobody.
What do you mean nobody? I'm 100 in the game. I'm leveled up all the way.
Well, I will be too. a lot of this weird. A lot of the legends either seem really overrated,
yeah,
or hugely underrated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a couple that seem right, but Batista's a 92. It's like he's on par with Seth Rollins. That's strange. Anyways.
I can see that. I see that. I see that. Well, you don't see. Batista's a multi-time world champion.
Yeah, I know. 90's appropriate, I feel like.
Okay.
92 seems a little high. Both Randy Savage and Ric Flair are 90s. This is like 1988 Ric Flair. That's Ric Flair in his prime.
Yeah.
He should be at least a 92.
Yeah.
Savage should be a 92 at least.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Two of the greatest of all time, and they're below Batista.
Let me ask you this. What do you think Hogan would have been at had he been in the game? What's Austin at?
I think he's 92.
92, okay.
HBK is 89, I think.
So in your head, you think he should be higher.
Yeah, he should be higher. As I've said, a lot of the legends either seem really high or really low.
Yeah.
Seem a bit high or a bit low.
Stone Cold is like one of the most protected dudes ever.
I know.
He should be higher than 92 or 93, whatever he is.
Yeah. I don't remember what The Undertaker is. He should be way up there.
One of them was significantly higher than the other. I think
the
Undertaker straight up.
What do you think about Finn Balor, Man Balor, 88, Demon Balor, 92?
It's a 4-point discrepancy?
Yeah.
Whoa. The jury's still out on Grey Balor. Is Grey Balor 95 then?
He's not in the game. You have to make him.
What did you say Demon is?
I think 92.
Then Grey Balor should be 96, should be the highest in the game.
Yeah, agreed.
Makes sense because the man, as long as he's wearing gray, is better than the demon.
Yeah.
By evidently 4 points. Anyways, good batch of questions today.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yes, and like I said, $20 a month Patreon mark. If you just want your question on, you can get four of those for $20. Four times on the show for $20.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that's it from Matt Chet. I want to say thank you very much. I'm going to continue smoking this fake cigarette.
It's a pen, man. That's a pen.
Well, we'll talk to you guys.
You didn't even smoke.
Talk to you guys later.